Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Untold Tales podcast. Today, we are doing another special episode of the Untold Tales podcast where we interview one of our popular authors and we ask them questions. And today, we are talking to Mr. Howard Loring. He is one of our popular authors with a podcast, and I'm verifying this with Apple Podcasts and Spotify. So that's my personal opinion, but it's your opinion too. So we're really excited. You may not know this, but Howard has authored 7 of the Untold Tales podcast short stories, and this includes episode 66, The Crazy Old Sandman, episode 68, Clash of the Redheads, episode 74, Reversing Gravity, and episode 76, Dinner with a Doge. So thank you so much for being here, Howard. I really appreciate you.
Great. I'm having a good time. It's no problem. I enjoy it.
Wonderful, wonderful.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Absolutely. So what you may not know about the Untold Tales podcast is that Dr. Jeffrey A. Robinson, he literally goes through hundreds, sometimes a couple hundred of stories every month, and he reads them and he vets them for our podcast. And one of the reasons why Howard is on our podcast is because again and again, he has demonstrated excellent storytelling, high quality stories, plots are amazing, his characters are amazing, and we're going to get to ask him some questions. You guys wrote in some questions for him, and so I'm going to ask him some things I wanted to know, and I'll ask him some things that you guys wanted to know, and we'll have a great time. So are you ready? Are you ready, Howard?
Or what?
Okay, so set aside about 30 minutes for this episode, and we're going to ask Howard some questions, and I'm going to pick at him like a tiny enthusiastic storytelling vulture. So hopefully you enjoy the process. Before we get going on all the questions, I wanted to ask you, Howard, is there anything right now that you are promoting or anything that you'd like to call attention to and what you're working on?
Well, no, but as from a personal standpoint, I just signed up for the Multiverse Convention, which is in Atlanta. I think it's in October. And, you know, I used to go to a lot of conventions, and the pandemic put the kibosh on that.
Yeah.
And this is the first convention that I've, you know, so, yeah, it was a pretty, you know, it was a pretty good deal for me. And on another personal level, I installed some bees yesterday. So
some bees.
Yeah, bees. I've been a beekeeper for 20 years, and my bees froze last year. It was
Oh no!
You know, I'm just it's a hobby with me, and I like giving honey away.
That is so cool.
9 degrees last year.
Jordan,
which was unheard of.
Oh, no.
So talk about paradox, and it froze my bees, so I had to get some new bees.
Oh, my gosh. That's so terrible.
I installed some new bees. That was new life. And so, that's what I've been doing here for the last couple of days, is getting my bee yard in order.
That is so cool. And I don't think we ever asked you that question. I find that fascinating because I'm terrified. Like literally one bee will send me indoors for the rest of the day. Like I'm so scared of bees.
I play guitar, and often I'll sting myself in my hand because I can play very well when because it frees you up. Bees are not like wasps. You know, they sting people on purpose if you have MS or arthritis. Oh. Honeybee.
Oh, interesting.
Honeybee venom is very therapeutic.
Oh.
And so I can play very well. I can play very well.
When you've been stung?
With my injured hands. So
that is crazy.
A lot of, this is a side point, but I've got a lot of YouTube videos where I play guitar and talk about my books on YouTube. Where I transport people back in time on city buses and things. So, you know, that's has to do with my book. So
that is so cool. Well, we'll link it to the show notes in this episode so people can go check that out. That's fascinating.
YouTube, Howard Loring. I've got dozens of YouTube videos where I transport people back in time on city buses and return them to their current reality safely. If you're very calm around the bees, they're calm around you. That's the key. If you make bad movements, they don't like that.
Well, that's a question that nobody wrote in because nobody knew that. So now you have a new trivia question whenever we ask during our gaming sessions in the coming years. You can remember Howard Loring is a beekeeper.
Long time.
Cool. For a long time. That's right. He's no novice.
Right.
So
I'm certified.
You're certified or certifiably. Well, very cool. Well, so let's get going on the questions so that we can kind of like dig deeper into your process, into your past, and hopefully, you know, what we can expect from the future. So, so I'm interested to know about your background. Are you a single child or do you have siblings? Where did you grow up?
Yes, I come from a giant family, huge family, and they're all storytellers.
Okay.
We have a lot of living history in our family. And, you know, I remember my grandfather talking about his grandfather who was in the Civil War. And, you know, my family is very funny. Everybody in my family tells a good joke. And if you can tell a good joke, you have a perfect sense of timing. If you can tell a good story, then whether or not you understand classical myth, if you can tell a good story, you're employing myth.
Yes.
I'm kind of the weird sheep in my family. My father was a doctor. He was an eminent surgeon. He was in college when he was 15. He had a double major. My mother went to the American Conservatory of Music in Chicago so she could spit on Juilliard people, you know, if she wanted to. She was qualified to conduct, although she never did. She was a esteemed music teacher for 50 years and was teaching music until she was 94 years old.
Oh, wow. She had a long career. That's something to aspire to. I'm always thinking about my longevity as well. So that's encouraging to know that, you know, she was able to continue.
There's five siblings in my family. They're all creative. They're all funny. And not all of them read, but they're all creative in other ways.
Hmm.
A lot of them do, you know, some of them do.
I was going to ask, were you born in Georgia? Is that where you were?
No, I was born in South Carolina, but my family, both sides, were from Tennessee.
Oh, okay.
And actually from Memphis and 13 generations in Memphis before there was a state of Tennessee. In fact, one of my earliest ancestors drew off the lines. He was there when they stopped the boat in the bend in the river. This is Anderson B. Carr. And they said they were going to build the city of Memphis there, it was in Memphis. And family lived on this land for 13 generations. We only sold out about 10 years ago, 12, 15 years ago. I can't remember. My aunt was the last one that lived there.
How did you know that? How did you know 13? Is there a log? Like, did somebody keep
We all know the family history. That was, I'm an old Southern family. There's people in my family and everybody is named after somebody else because that's the way you do it. I have an ancestor who was a two-star Confederate general, William Wayne Loring, in the Confederate Army. And I live in outside of Atlanta now, and the Battle of Kennesaw Mountain in Georgia, outside of Atlanta, he held a flank at the Battle of Kennesaw Mountain. He was in five of the eight battles, or there were six or eight battles of the Atlanta campaign. He was in like five of the battles before he got shot in the chest. And it took him 47 days to get over his injury. And by that time, Atlanta had fallen. And he went up he was in the Battle of Nashville. And then he went into North Carolina before the Confederacy finally gave up.
Did he leave a diary that, I mean, you said 47 days he recovered. I mean, like, I don't know anything past my grandpa and they came from Puerto Rico. I know very little about my family.
That side of my family's been well researched. My aunt was a probate lawyer, and she researched that side of the family.
Wow.
And I did a lot of research on my dad's side of the family. But then again, I remember my grandfather talking about his grandfather, you know, and it's a Southern thing. So that's why I love history.
Yeah. Well, it shows because you just keep writing history. It's in your blood. I mean, that's what you write about.
When I got older, I read a lot of history.
Yeah.
And once I realized it was a thing, I became interested because, you know, as a child, I was very inquisitive. But once I got older, I suddenly became aware that there was stuff I didn't know. Hmm. And what is that all about? I got to know everything.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't have to figure it out. You just go read somebody who already has figured it out. So that's why I love history.
That's awesome.
But when I started writing books, I already knew a bunch of the history.
So did you go to school to be able to write? Did you get a degree in writing, or is that something naturally that just came out of you as a result of your upbringing?
No, I went to a church school. I went to a small church school, and I majored in science. I have a degree in experimental psychology.
Okay.
And I'm an avid reader, and I made a living being an artist. And I always thought I would write a book one day. And, you know, I was a printmaker, and I was a sculptor, and I was, you know, I did all these artistic things for a living. So one day I started writing a book, and it, you know, I wasn't really serious, and I would pull it down and work on it and put it back, and, you know, I would show people parts of it, or I would give little pieces to friends of mine. And finally they said, well, you know, are you ever going to do anything, you know?
They ask them all that.
Yeah, I finally wrote it where it said the end. It was horrible. It had run-on sentences. My theory was, you know, write it and then fix it, you know?
Right, of course.
So that's what I did. They said, well, you got to publish it. I wasn't going to publish it. It was an intellectual exercise to see if I could do it. So then I self-published it. And I said, well, you know, what about the next? The next what, you know?
Yeah.
Well, I didn't
want to. The people want more.
I didn't want to write a sequel. The first one took a long time. The second one, it came pretty quick. I wrote it in like 6 months.
Wow.
And then I wrote another one. You know, I mean, so they're not sequels, but they all relate. And they all explain each other.
Yes.
They all fill in the backstory.
Yeah.
So it's like one big story.
Yeah, and exactly.
In any order, because they're all contained. And the more you read them, the more you understand the total. And the way you read them, the sequence in which you read them, depends on how the backstory is revealed. You say, oh, that's the guy in the other thing, you know, that's the one that was in that other book. That other guy, you know. You know, I didn't set out to write time travel or sci-fi.
One of the things I've noticed in your writing is a segue. You write about a lot of redheads. And I was wondering, because one of your most popular episodes on the Untold Tales podcast is Clash of the Redheads.
Wow.
And I'm curious, was there a love interest that was a redhead or something like that that encouraged you to write redhead stories? Or what's that all about?
Well, I write epic fables. The plot is secondary in an epic. It's not really what the people do in an epic.
Right.
It's how the people change in an epic, because an epic is universal. So when you read an epic, you relate to it because it's about things that happen to everybody.
Yes, and that's why we still have Greek and Roman stories and all kinds of, they're pervasive in our culture because they're universal. They don't change, right?
Right. And the rules of of myth, which I use. Mm-hmm. You know, they weren't thought up by somebody, you know, or some egghead. You know, they were honed over time. And these are the rules because they're what work. Homer didn't invent the rules of myth. Homer used what was known to the best effect, and he did it very early on. So Homer's known as a genius, you know. So the rules of myth work because they were honed over time. Or have you ever seen a movie that didn't, you know, the photography was great and, you know, a lot of, but it didn't work for you?
Yes, absolutely.
The myth is all screwed up.
Mm-hmm.
And it just didn't click, you know. But if you use myth well, see, myth tells the backstory, mm-hmm, without having to, you know, because it uses things that are, myth is unconscious, or it can be.
Right.
You know, Little Orphan Annie, nobody has to tell you she's in bad trouble because she's an orphan.
Right.
And, you know, you already know that she's on her own. And she's a girl child. She's a child. So she's vulnerable. So this is played over and over and over again. Dorothy Gale of Kansas and the Wizard of Oz is an orphan girl child.
Yeah.
Princess Leia in Star Wars, which is way in the future. She's an orphan girl child. Yeah. You know, you're already drawn in. You don't have to say this girl is in, you know, it's subconscious. So if you
is that why
wall, it draws you in, see?
Is that why all these Disney people don't have moms? Because I'm always telling my daughter, why do they always lose their mom? Like, what is it with the mom? You know, like, can somebody keep their mom and lose their dad? Like, you know, because as a mom, I'm always just like, why is the mom always out of the picture? And what you're saying is that that is the formula of myth that is effective.
Yeah. So I write epic fables. So they're fables. They're very simply told, but they're epic, so they're layered. So they have, you know, the good and evil, right and wrong, blah, 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 blah. So when I was starting out, I needed simple things for my characters. One of them was big. He was a giant, big guy. One of them was thin. Thin, tall man.
Yeah.
It was a redhead.
Uh-oh.
Redheaded woman, the tall, thin guy. And so my characters are in all the books. So you see, so the Clash of the Redheads has the tall, thin time traveler and the redheaded woman time traveler. And they go see Thomas Jefferson, who's a redhead.
I didn't know that. How did you know that? Do they say that in the history books? I don't ever remember knowing that fact about Thomas Jefferson.
Oh, yeah. He was famous for being redheaded. And all of his pictures are, he's redheaded.
Interesting. I wasn't paying attention. I was intrigued.
Yes. But to answer your question, when I was first writing the first novel, and I was looking for an idealized, beautiful love interest, I went back to my first love, who was a redheaded girl.
I knew it.
Why? Rather than that. Yeah. So write what you know.
That's awesome. That's awesome. And you know, fiery redhead, who can resist? I mean, just who can resist it? I mean, thank you so much for that explanation. That's really, really a cool journey. I like how you weave all that together and you stay true to it in your writing. What made you want to get started writing? And most importantly, why did you submit to Untold Tales?
Actually, you know, I'm in many social media groups, like on Facebook. Mark Nesser.
Okay. Mark, yeah. He's another Untold Tales author.
Well, he and I started corresponding. And he said, you know, your stuff is pretty good. And I was like, you know, not, you know, blah, 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 blah. And he said, you need to submit to this podcast, because this guy, he scrutinizes very heavily, and he's looking for good stuff, and he's having a hard time finding stuff that meets his criteria, and you need to submit. So I was very flattered, because I sent two stories, and the good doctor wrote me back, and he said, these are very interesting, and we're going to bump some people, and we're going to get these two made, and do you have more? And I sent a couple more, and he said, wow, these are interesting. We want more people, and we have more. And so, yeah, he's been very flattering. And it's very nice that I've had so many done, and they're done expertly, professionally, and I couldn't be more pleased. I've told you before through emails that I couldn't be more pleased.
Thank you so much. I want to do
one of my novels.
Absolutely. I would love to do one of your novels. I just get engrossed by the characters, and I love to just dive in. And, you know, sometimes I'll even get, you know, some of you authors throw some things at me, like accents and words and things that I basically can't even say. And I'll hire somebody to help me figure it out to give you a great product. So I'm curious, what's your favorite story that you ever wrote? And it doesn't have to be on the podcast, but what's your favorite story that you ever wrote? And did it have a personal meaning to you?
Yeah, actually, probably the best thing that personally was gratifying me was something that was not published. I wrote a piece for my mother on her 90th birthday, and I also wrote something for my brother-in-law on his 80th birthday. And they were both pretty funny, and they, you know, nobody read them except for people in my family. When I was a kid, I had this box turtle in the house, and I kept him in the bottom drawer of my...
Oh, my gosh.
That's the normal.
Oh, my gosh. If I was your mom, I'd be like, what? What?
Well, you know, I had older brothers who had snakes and, you know, that.
Oh, my gosh.
And so, you know, one day the box turtle was gone, and, you know, I knew my mother let him loose, and she denied it for 100 years. She denied it, you know. And so I wrote this piece about the box turtle. And,
you know, if
it had gotten out, it would have been, it would have stumped the house, you know. I mean, so, and then I wrote this piece for my brother-in-law. He was an eminent surgeon as well. As, when I first met him, my sister started dating him in college. He was in medical school. She was in nursing school. They went to Duke. And so we go up there to meet him. It was two of my brothers and my mother drove up there, and my sister and my mother huddled over in the corner, and they come and they say, well, we want you to meet him, but he's with his lab partner, and they're in the cadaver room. And we don't want to freak you out. And I was like 10 years old. And I was like, are you kidding? You know, I want to go see the pit. Well, it was like a Frankenstein movie. We go into this big thing, and it was like, seemed to me like there was 1,000 tables. I'm sure there was like several dozen, but it was dark. It was in the evening. There were all these covered tables. And over in the corner, there was this one table with a light on it and these two guys. And I was like, all right, you know, walking through, it was like a parking lot where there was so many tables going. And, you know, I was so disappointed because they had a sheet over everything. All the tables had sheets, but I figured that we would see the dead guy that he was working on. Only his arm was exposed. They had a sheet over him, and they had like forceps in his arm. They were dissecting his arm. Anyway, I wrote a story about the first time I met him, you know. It was pretty funny.
That's funny. So do you have any suggestions for new authors coming up, like how to find their style maybe, or just the writing process in general? Like, what would you tell a younger author wanting to begin writing?
Well, I think the old adages are true. You know, they I always heard several things. You know, write what you know, find your own voice, and never stop. So, you know, when I started writing, I didn't think I knew much. And, but I did. I knew, you know, and I didn't think I knew much. And it turns out you do write what you know, even though you don't think you do. And and if you'd never, you know, I'm pretty hard-headed. So, and I'm pretty stubborn. So, you know, if you want to write and you get frustrated and you get, you know, people, here's the thing. I've written all these books and I've never once, and this is only for me, I'm not telling people to do this.
Right.
But I started out each of my books with one idea, one strange hook, one weird idea. And I went with it. I never wrote an outline, not once. And I know people who are obsessed over outlines, who write pages and pages and pages. In fact, I had a cousin, he's dead now, crazy cousin Jim, I thought. And he had been an editor of the Chicago Daily News. And he was like 90 years old at the time when I was writing my first book. And I went to him and I said, I'm having a little problem here because, you know, it's kind of convoluted and stuff. And he said, well, give me an outline. And I said, well, you know, it's kind of, you know, blah, blah, blah. And he said, that's bull. I could do the Old Testament in 2 pages. I said, oh, okay, y'all, that's not me, you know. So my advice, if you're stuck or, you know, if you decide that your artwork, that you want to express your art in words, if your palette is words, then paint until you're satisfied. And never give up until you're satisfied. And you can always change what's on the page, but if you never start, you can't change anything.
Yeah.
So if you think about it ad infinitum and never put anything on the page, then you'll never get anywhere. If you spend all your time thinking about it, you'll never get anywhere. So, you know, if you want to spend your time making an outline, that's fine. If, you know, but put something on the page. And my first book, I just wanted to get to the point where I said the end. Then I went back and I fixed it, you know.
Yeah.
And I went through a couple of editions first, you know.
Yeah.
And I mean, it took a while.
Yeah. I think a lot of people are paralyzed by the creative process because they want it to be perfect out of the gates. And art is messy. I mean, I got asked the other day about my narration process because maybe you see on Instagram, you know, narrators sort of flawlessly executing paragraph after paragraph. And, you know, for me, it takes me a good half hour just to get warmed up in the story and the narration. I make a lot of mistakes. I start over again. Almost every time I step up to the microphone, it takes me a minute to get my bearings. But if I got paralyzed and didn't do anything because I'm like, this is going to take too long, I suck, you know, I would never audition. I would never produce anything. You get a process as you're in action, but if you never start, because you're paralyzed, it's not going to be good, then that kind of does a disservice. Don't die with your music in you. That's what they say, right?
Right. Well, I would write, and if I got stuck, I'd just reread what I wrote.
Mm-hmm.
Get unstuck. I was writing short stories. I had this idea that I would write intellectual and historical epoch changing things in history.
Right.
Well, I was going to trace all of history. So here's a thing, and here's a thing, and here's a thing, and here's a thing. So I had a bunch of short stories, and these are the, you know, these are the stories that are on the podcast. So they're, you know, the one about the Sandman.
Yeah, that's a really popular one, the crazy old Sandman.
Right.
Or the general mechanics of warfare. I think it's a very long title.
Well, that's 400 BC.
Yeah.
All right. Well, all right. So I had all of these things, and I realized I had a giant gap. Okay, in the timeline, because they went from way back to modern times. And so it had taken me X amount of time to write all of these, and I had a gap. And so I wrote the Redhead, Clash of the Redheads, because the one about the Redheads is about science.
Right.
So they're trying to codify what science is. That's what it is. So the one that comes after that is the one about Einstein. So where he's at dinner, where he's a little boy, and it's science is already, they know what science is. And the one before that is about Henry VIII.
Yet dinner with a doge.
Where they're talking about, the, you know, they're one day they're going to figure out science. Okay, so I needed something in between. So it took me longer to write the Redheads than it did to write all of the other short stories.
Oh, really? Wow, that's crazy.
I don't know why. Because I wanted it to be good, I guess. You know,
And the history of it, you wanted to make it relevant, right, to that point in history of what they would have known about.
Right.
So that nobody yells at you how unplausible that story could be, right? Because,
well, I already knew a lot of the history.
Yeah,
I knew that Jefferson was into fossils. I knew, you know, so all of the short stories that have been done, I pretty much knew all of the history already because I read history.
Right.
Now I had to check some of the facts and maybe some of the, I did look up what Mastodon meant.
Oh, yeah, I remember. Yeah, that's a funny part of the story. People need to listen to that. That was really, really funny. Like when you're like, oh, really? I was taken aback when I read it. I was like, okay, interesting. And the way that it came up in the story was really funny too, because of the time and men and women and propriety and all that kind of stuff was really, really
what? Funny. She's a fiery redhead.
She's a fiery redhead. She'll say it. She'll say it.
Right.
That's good. That's funny. So some people know you only as a short story writer, but I heard that you write novels. So can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes, I write novels. On the Elastic Limit of Time, which the Elastic Limit is jargon for time travel. Which, according to my theory, so the elastic limit, you have to understand the elastic limit in order to time travel, because you have to manipulate the elastic limit the hardware manipulates the elastic limit, which permits time travel.
Right.
It's also a metaphor for your imagination. So my first book is Beyond the Elastic Limit, which is beyond your imagination.
How cool.
So the second book is Piercing the Elastic Limit, which is blowing your imagination away.
Yeah. So
my third book is Tales of the Elastic Limit, which is stories of your imagination. Okay. So, I write books on the elastic limit of time. So They're epic fables, as I said. They are simply told, but they are layered like an onion. So they're very simple and then simple and then simple. They get bigger and bigger and bigger. And then it's like a cast of millions. And it's like, it blows your mind. It's like, and
it's like the tiniest atom to like the billions of universes, and they're all sort of like moving in a similar fashion. And it's like, it's so consistent, right?
Yes.
It's so consistent.
Yes. Well, it's the multiverse into itself. They're historical fiction, but that's not the point. Mm-hmm. They're epics. They're universal. Everybody can relate to them. You know, everybody has been unlucky in love. Everybody's hated their job. Mm-hmm. Everybody, you know, it's, that's what it's about.
You can hate your job in the Starfleet, and you can hate your job as an indigenous, forager, and you can hate your job as a ant in a colony.
Yes.
And, which, by the way, A Bug's Life was the way, my way into voiceover. That's what really sparked my interest in the whole industry. Yeah, the movie A Bug's Life, about basically him hating his role in the world. I really identified with that.
That's collective consciousness there. Honeybees and ants and termites. You take a bee or an ant or a termite, you put them in a cage, they have locomotion, they mm-hmm. can go around, they can get food, they can survive, but they have no conception of what to do.
Yeah, and it's just
put them in a colony with a million more like them, they know exactly what to do.
Yeah.
They'll go and build this, or they'll go and forage that, they'll do. It's like a link in a chain, it's like a bit in a computer.
Yeah.
Exactly what to do.
Yeah.
So, that's wild. So, yeah. So my books on the Elastic Limited Time are epic fables. They're simple, but they cover big things. They have a true history with real people, with documented circumstance. They have, I drew up a list because it's so long.
Tell us a list, and I can put links to this information down in the show notes. After we record.
I've written about Julius Caesar, Marcus Agrippa, and Marcus Claudius Marcellus, who were Roman commanders. Scientists I've written about were Archimedes, Albert Einstein, Joseph Priestley, Cuvier, who you read about. Tudor politicians, Henry VIII, Charles Brandon, Robert mm-hmm. Cecil, Francis Walsingham, Henry Percy, William Paget, William Somers, who you've done, he was mm-hmm. the fool. John Dudley, Elizabethan artist, Christopher Marlowe. I've written extensively about him, Shakespeare, Edward Allen, Richard Burbage, colonial Americans, Thomas Jefferson, Bishop James Madison, William Clark, classical musicians. I've written extensively on Robert Schumann, his wife Clara Schumann, Johannes Brahms, Joseph Johann, who was a classical violinist, Frederick White, who was Clara Schumann's father. He was world famous music teacher. Mm-hmm. Felix Mendelssohn. True events that I've covered were the fall of Syracuse, which is
Sandman, right?
The Battle of Munda, mm-hmm. the Court of Henry VIII, the sinking of the warship, the Mary Rose, Elizabethan politics, the rise of modern literature, the age of fossils. That was the
Scratch of the Redhead.
Yeah, classical music and classical physics. You know, I've read a lot of real stuff, but that's not what it's about. It's
right.
about humanity and how people. It's about how the characters change.
Right.
Now, and it's relatable
because
it's epic. And it's, I use a lot of classical myth. So you're sucked in. And, you know, if myth is correctly employed, it makes you feel ways that you don't understand. I mean, it creeps you out or it makes you feel good. It makes you joyful, you know. And you don't, it makes you feel ways that you don't understand why.
Exactly. So we're coming down to the end of our time together here in this podcast episode. However, Howard Loring is available all over the interwebs. We'll put links in the show notes so that you can follow his work. And of course, I'm sure we're going to be having more of your stories on the podcast, and they're so much fun to narrate. I hope they're just as much fun for our listeners to listen to and to discover together. So did you have any other parting words for everyone before we say goodbye?
Well, I would like to say that I've been published in a sci-fi anthology this year.
Oh, wow. Congratulations.
And I was published last year in the 2022 Science Fiction Novelist Anthology.
Oh,
and
perfect.
This year in Science Fiction Novelist Anthology. And so they take two submissions a year. And
oh, wow.
I submitted two stories last year and two this year. And both of them were accepted on
Yay!
Both.
So amazing. Congratulations.
I've been published 2 years in a row. And it's an international thing. This year, there were, I think there were 17 stories from 11 authors from four countries.
Wow.
And so, and plus the podcast that you were doing. And so, the elastic limit of time, knowledge of the elastic limit of time is growing.
I love it. Well, I'm sure everybody will be excited to follow your journey as an author, as a person, as a beekeeper. Obsessing over the fact that you're a beekeeper. I think that's so cool. Save the bees.
I have YouTube videos and I have a website which has my blogs on it.
Perfect. Well, we will continue to follow you in your journey. Thank you so much for sharing your heart, for sharing your talent with the Untold Tales podcast listenership and watchership, if you're watching this on YouTube. And we just really appreciate your time today. So thank you so much, and we'll see you soon. Bye.
Thank you very much. I enjoyed it immensely.
Bye. Thank you.
Thank you.